Hi, I'm Lisa Levin.
And I'm Julie Sapper.
We're the co-founders of Run Farther and Faster and co-hosts of the podcast under the same name.
Well, we started this podcast as a Boston Marathon-focused podcast based on the experiences from our combined 31 finishes. We cover all things running-related.
We've coached runners of all levels and goal distances all over the world for over 13 years.
Thanks so much for joining us. We are so excited you're here. Hey, Lisa.
Hey, Julie. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing this week?
I am doing well. It's been a busy week for us. It's July 1st is coming up. So we have a new set of runners that are starting in July to work toward fall races. So we've been busily bringing them on board and putting their schedules together, which is always kind of fun to get new people started and start looking toward fall races, which seems like a far way out, but training is starting now.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And we also, it's funny, we definitely live parallel lives, because what people don't realize about us sometimes is that we also both have other jobs too. So while we coach, it feels like we coach full-time, we actually have both of us other careers on top of our coaching. So it always seems that at the end of the month, we both have big projects due for our work at the same time as making sure that all of our schedules are lined up the first of the month. So it's always a little chaotic this time of the month, every month. But yeah, I love the work we do. I love connecting with all of our runners. And I find it very exciting once we get into July, because it's that much closer to the fall races. And it's a lot of doing the more specific fun workouts and designing those for the individual goals. So yeah, that's what's going on here. And then of course, air quality. I thought we were through this, and God bless the firefighters in Canada. And I see people outside running today with the air quality that's in the red. And I'm just curious as to what motivates folks to run in when the air smells the way it does. So I just hope when I see people running today, I hope that they're only running for a very short time and they're running at a super easy pace, because those particles are not good for our lungs. It's just, it's not worth it.
Yeah. And it's just crazy to me. Like, I always think about different things that may impact our ability to run. Like if it's super hot and super humid, or there are storms coming through, or in the winter, there are, you know, snowstorms or whatever it might be that affect. Air quality was not anything really on our radars until recently, when it's been a couple of times here in our area, in the DC area, but also, you know, really throughout the country. And it's happened last summer with, you know, wildfires in California. We had runners who couldn't go out, it's dangerous to go outside and run, and we can't get in runs or have to move runs around because of the air quality. Like now I have the website up in my browser, you know, the air quality website. And I check to see, you know, in the morning, before either I go out to run or, you know, before our runners are going out to run, to see, you know, what that looks like. But I hope this doesn't become like a regular thing that, you know, we in DC, we worry about the heat and humidity in the summer, but we're also going to have to worry about air quality and have to, you know, not be able to get out for our runs and with the poor air quality. So it's a little scary. Global warming, I think. And, you know, it's a little bit, it is scary, and it's scary to look outside and see, you can actually see it in the air. So like you said, if people are outside, certainly we would never want anybody who's got asthma or any breathing problems or respiratory issues out trying to exercise in this. And really, no run is that important. You can get on a treadmill, you can move your run, even if you have to take a couple of days off. You can get on a plane and fly somewhere. Get on vacation. I had a runner say that, you know, in her comments, that, gosh, I wish I was back in, where she was on a business trip last week. So I wish I was back there. So that I could actually go out and run, as the air was a lot clearer there. So, so it's just odd that, you know, that has now become something that we have to warn our runners about, something we have to take into account when we're doing our schedules, is air quality. That's not in 14, almost 15 years of coaching, that's not been something generally, at least, especially out here in California, once in a while, we've had to deal with that, but that's not been something we've had to talk about with our runners.
For sure. And if in terms of pragmatic sort of the scheduling and implementing what to do if you're not able to run, a missed long run is not going to make or break your training at all. So if you're in a place where you, over the weekend, the air quality is red or purple and you're supposed to do your long run, don't worry about it. It's okay. It will not blow your training at all if you miss a long run.
And no, but doing like, you know, a long run in poor air quality may affect your training for the rest of the cycle. So
yeah. So don't worry about it if you miss a long run. It's A-okay. It's fine. Yeah. So moving on, we are talking about something a little bit different this week, and we wanted to tee it up because it's not off topic, but it's a topic related to running, and it's something that's near and dear to us, and that is kids and sports. And when we talk about kids of all ages, from very young to teenagers. And the reason we wanted to talk about this subject is because, of course, we're both moms. We both have kids who are involved in sports, and so many of our runners have kids who are athletes. And because of that, we get a lot of inquiries from our runners over the years, to especially in the summer, to support their kids in terms of preparing for the cross country season, the field hockey season, the soccer season, where they want to be able to have some type of program to follow over the summer. And generally, some of the kids will coach, but for the most part, we refer a lot of kids to cross country coaches who are in the school system, such as Kelly Redmond. But we just feel very strongly that we should explore this topic. We think we have a lot of listeners out there that, like us, sometimes don't know what to do in terms of how to support our kids, our athletes, also how to support a coach, but at the same time, when to speak up. And it's hard to know. And so we thought we would get on a few experts over the next few weeks to guide us a little bit and talk through this. So Lisa, what else did you want to add about this subject?
You know, it's just been, you know, we're in the summer now. Our podcast episodes are not so focused on boss training for Boston or training for a goal race. And we've had a list in the back of our heads or written down of topics that, you know, come up and we get asked a lot and that we'd like to address at some point on the podcast. So the summer is for us a great time to start bringing in some of those experts and addressing some of those topics. So like you said, I think, you know, it's interesting to see as runners and coaches have aged, so has our kind of demographic and what we see with our peers has developed over the years. And we do see a lot of parents who are trying to help support their kids and a host of questions that come up of, you know, what is the proper training? What nutrition comes up a lot. And we're going to talk about that this evening. Coaching, you know, how much to defer to coaches, how much additional coaching or guidance to get kids. And we do get a lot of parents who come and ask us if we can help their kids prepare for cross country season. And it's really never been our niche. We don't feel like it's our specialty. So like you said, we often refer those parents to coaches who do work regularly with kids, but so many different questions and different angles come up on this. And I think as runners, I know we think that maybe that we can then coach our kids and we know what to tell our kids because, hey, I know about nutrition and I know about training principles, but it doesn't always apply to kids the way it does to us. And then there's a whole psychological aspect too of the parent being involved in helping their child and supporting their child. Like some kids don't want to listen to their parents, and sometimes it's better if a coach or an expert is involved. And like you said, then parents also wonder when to step in and how to supervise that relationship and make sure that it's productive. And so we just have a lot of questions, and it was just one of those topics we had written down to get to when we had some extra time when we weren't focusing on Boston or preparing for races or you know, those types of topics that we typically consider. So, and we have a great network of experts that we turn to for advice on these issues and these topics. And so tonight we're going to welcome one of those.
Yeah. So tonight we're welcoming a past podcast guest who we adore, and that is dietitian Amy Goldsmith. And why we're having a dietitian on first, as we talk about this subject, is because not only does Amy work with adolescent clients who are athletes, but she has a full-time therapist in her office. And so not only is she approaching athletes from the perspective of supporting their fueling and their nutrition, but also her practice supports their mental health. And as a result, Amy has been exposed to a lot of stories over the years, a lot of iterations of what it means to be a youth and teen athlete, what it's like to play on a large team in a large school system, but also what it's like to be a phenomenal athlete and have pressure because everyone's looking at you in terms of being a high achiever and how to manage that pressure. Amy works a lot with families because she has a full-time therapist in her office. And of course, working with the therapist and also with the patient working with Amy, often families are an important component of providing support. And Amy, in turn, provides support to parents to guide them on how to support their child and when to step in a coaching relationship. So we wanted to talk with Amy. She has a lot to say on this subject. Amy has her own podcast, Don't Be Foodish. And she actually talked about an ancillary topic a couple of weeks ago with her therapist. Definitely check that out. They were talking just about the state of sports in public schools and the problems. And I mean, that's a whole other issue. And briefly what they touched on, I couldn't agree more. It's so darn intense. And there's a lot of problems with access to play these days because in order to play a high school sport, and especially in a big public school system, one has to receive training before they even start high school. So there's a barrier to entry because not everybody can afford to do travel, whatever, or club, whatever that sport is. And as a result, they get to high school and they're behind before they even try out. And it didn't always used to be this way. And you know, I don't know the solution, but I do know that that is definitely a barrier to entry for so many families. And Amy touched on that on her podcast, and we encourage folks to check that out. We'll link her podcast in the show notes. But today's discussion is going to be more about how we can support our kids as parents, as coaches. And even if you're not a parent and listening, we're discussing this from the viewpoint of how we can best support athletes. So if you have an athlete in your life that you're looking to support, whether that athlete's an adolescent or adult, I think there's a lot of relevant information in this. And from a personal standpoint, I know I've talked about this before on the podcast. I really struggled when Noah was running cross country, his then coaches, there were things going on that I knew were not right. But I bit my tongue and I didn't say anything because that was his sport. But there were times when I really grappled with, should I step in and say something? Because I did see a lot of injuries on this team and I wasn't sure. And I don't know if I handled it right, but I knew at the end of the day, I wanted to support my child and what he wanted. And I didn't want to be that parent because that's not my role, but it was definitely hard. And there were things I was able to do at home to support him. But I still look back on that time and wonder, did I handle that okay? I don't know. So I'm really grateful that Amy's willing to come talk to us. And Lisa, you're obviously a parent of a phenomenal athlete. You have Alex, who's a cyclist. You have Kira, who plays soccer. You have Ari, who's a cyclist. Like you also understand that there are times when you maybe think you might want to step in, but you don't. And it's hard sometimes.
Yeah. And what we really ultimately want is our kids to find joy in sports for life. So, you know, we see so many kids and I talk about this a lot that I'm glad I didn't run in high school in college because maybe I wouldn't be doing it now. And a lot of the people I know who did run in high school don't run anymore. So what ideally I want for my kids is for them to find a joy and passion in doing something and be able to do it for the rest of their life or make it a lifetime sport. And if you burn out early or you don't fuel well, you get injured or it becomes a drag or, you know, you just start to hate it. And it's not going to be something you do for life. So I often ask myself the question of like, how do I make sure my kids enjoy doing this and are healthy doing it and feel good about it and have it be an enjoyable part of their life for as long as they can.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like that's the key is I always kind of do a check with my kids and say, are you enjoying it? Do you want to continue this? Even on the hard days, do you still like it? Because I think that's important. Not every day is going to be perfect, but if they are deriving joy from being part of a team and they feel like they're learning a lot and they feel like they're gaining lifetime skills, they may not play the sport for life because some sports don't translate to being able to play the sport for life, but they're able to to learn the skills as an athlete and apply them, whether it's to different activities in the workplace, whatever that looks like. There are so many gifts from being part of a team, and it doesn't just have to be sports. It can be any hobby. You want to make sure whatever that hobby is, that you're doing it for the right reasons. And yeah, I think that's really
important. And also the right reason not being because it's a sport I played. Like, that was something, you know, hard for me, is that my kids don't run. They don't enjoy running, and that's okay. Like, they don't have to be runners, but I want them to find something that they feel as passionate about. And like you just said, gives them all the lessons and the life skills that running has done for me. So if it's not running, that's okay. People always ask me, oh, do your kids run? And I say, no, they found their own passion. So I think that's really important, that as parents, we don't expect our kids to do exactly, you know, for the trajectory to look exactly like ours did. So I'm looking forward to hearing what Amy has to say. And next week, we're going to talk to another expert, a coach, on coaching youth athletes. So I think this is going to be a good couple discussions on youth athletes. And I'm looking forward to collecting information for myself.
Absolutely. So before we go and kick it off to Amy, we just want to encourage everyone to leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. If you leave a review for us, we would really appreciate it. Just send us an email that you left us a review, preferably on Apple Podcasts. And if you send us an email, you will be entered to win this month a pair of Gooder sunglasses. So So leave us a review, send us an email at julieandlisa@runfartherandfaster.com, and you will be entered to win a pair of Gooder sunglasses. We love our Gooders. And we also want to thank this week's sponsor, Lagoon Pillows. We talked a little bit last week about how much we love our Lagoon Pillow. We will once again link in the show notes the code so that you can order a pillow through our landing page through Run Farther and Faster and get a 10% discount.
15%. Yes, 15% discount.
RFF. Lisa, I'm still enjoying my pillow. I swear we did not solicit this sponsor. He came to us. Sent us a pillow, and I am loving my pillow. It's amazing. I'm not just saying this.
100% agree. Yeah. I said this last week, but I look forward to going to bed and putting my head on that pillow. Like, it's really, I didn't think a pillow would make that much difference, but it does.
Yeah. So we'll put the landing page in our show notes. Just click out, put in the discount code that will be in our show notes, and you can get 15% off on an order of a Lagoon pillow. So Lisa, I hope you have a great week.
You too, Julie.
Bye.
Bye.
Amy Goldsmith, welcome to the Run Farther and Faster podcast. I believe this is your fourth time on our podcast. So congratulations on tying with Dave McGilvery for being our most frequent podcast guest. So thank you so much for joining us again today. And before we kick it off and get into the substance of our discussion today, could you introduce yourself to our listeners and share a little bit about your expertise?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I always love talking with you both. It's always such a great conversation. For those of you who may have not heard of me before, I'm Amy Goldsmith. I'm a dietitian and owner of a private practice, Kindred Nutrition and Wellness. It's based off of Frederick, Maryland, but we do have we do see people nationally, virtually. Our practice really specializes in three parts: so sports nutrition, eating disorder assessments and treatment, gastrointestinal disease, and then we do have mental health therapists in our practice as well. So we really try to focus on the behavioral and the medical side, which I'm so happy to see that a lot of people are getting on board that both are equally as important. So it's exciting.
Yeah, and I'll bet, Amy, too, you probably have a lot of overlap between those different facets of your practice: eating disorders, sports, yes. Gastrointestinal issues in runners. I know you've helped a lot of our runners that have GI issues, and then the mental part of it, like that really comes into play. So I think it's really helpful to your clients that you address all of those. You have experts in your practice, and you have expertise in all of those areas, which often can be overlapping.
Yes, there's a lot of overlap. I mean, it is the true like gut health or gut brain connection, which there's a lot of research on that too. But I think that specifically in our practice, we are constantly going back and forth from that axis: the gut, the brain, the gut, the brain. So very interesting.
generally speaking, you said, I know your practice is nationwide, but what generally is the age of the majority of your clients?
So that's a good question. And we usually say we've always seen from infant to, you know, geriatric or whatever the common kind of description is. But I would say, you know, it's changed a little bit. And, you know, I feel silly constantly referencing the pandemic, but I really do feel like it was a significant change from a mental health side of things. So usually I would say it's like the younger adult teens. So about like the 11 to maybe like 22 years old. And then kind of it would be maybe 35 to 55. I would say the majority of my patients right now is that younger group. I do have a couple of adults, and I really think that that's mostly because a lot of adults really have kind of like put themselves on pause, just because I do think we're kind of in this, you know, we're having kind of like an epidemic with, you know, the young adult with all of the, everything that they're working through as we're getting kind of back to normal.
And Amy, you mentioned, you know, you have on staff a mental health professional and you've recently brought into your practice. Tell us a little bit about why you decided to do that and how that you feel, how you feel that adds to your, the treatment of your patients.
Yeah. I've always been, very kind of opinionated, I guess, about this, but, I was very interested in psychology, you know, in school. Just there was something about the combination of like the nutrition and the psychology. So I'm going to kind of, I just felt like I'm going to talk to people about like what they need to eat, you know, to be, you know, their best physical health, but there's lots of barriers to that. Right. And so it's really, really important to understand the human psyche. You know, what motivates people, what are the stages of change? I need to be able to like read people, like their facial expressions, you know, and even their body language. Are they closed off? Do they seem open and that sort of thing? So it was always really interesting and important to me. And then of course, when I really kind of had the broke down to the niches, I mean, that I work with psychology, I mean, we cannot do our job without that mental health assistance. I mean, eating disorders, it's a mental health disorder that has physical complications. So I need a therapist to really dig into all the red flags that I see. And sports nutrition too, sports nutrition and performance. I mean, I'm sure you guys have this experience. I have many people that I work with who, you know, can definitely have you know, obstacles with like anxiety or, you know, just getting worked up, you know, on race day and things like that. So just being able to kind of understand how to ground yourself is like such a big part of the performance. I mean, then GI too. I mean, I feel like we often, our providers often do not assess the stress that's going on with the body with GI, because again, we have that gut brain connection. So I've always worked with therapists and thought it was very valuable. I felt like bringing one in-house was going to even be more valuable, because we can have conversations about, collaborating patients like right then and there. So, it's been wonderful.
And with respect to the therapist, is that something you require your patients to see? Like, how does it work in your practice? And since bringing on the therapist, how has your relationship with your patients changed?
Very good question. So, yes, for eating disorder patients that I work with, they do have to be seeing a therapist. And that's really in the true outpatient level. Really you can't treat, eating disorders with just one part, just the medical part or just the behavioral part. So that's always been a policy of mine, and I will work with any therapist. So you do not have to be seeing my therapist in my building, by no means. I'll meet with anybody. We do, train a lot and have meetings. We have collaborating meetings, all the time where we assess how everybody's doing medically, and the GI and the sports nutrition. And part of that assessment is if they would benefit from therapy? And if so, then we do refer out. We have that discussion. So I would say since we have brought therapy in, I know from the eating disorder side, we're able to get to that weight restoration in half the time. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And I think really it's because I've always loved working with therapists, but when they're out of my office, we play a lot of phone tag, right? So, cause we're in meeting with patients all the time. So it's just so nice to be able to say like, hey, I'm handing off this person to your office. This is what we talked about. As a dietitian, I'm really kind of triggering lots of things and I'm asking a lot. And like, they may be really wound up or anxious about this. And then the therapist has the ability to like work on it right then. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think, like I said before, that your patients are benefiting from that kind of that holistic approach. Because like you said, any of the issues we have or the questions that we have around nutrition often come back to some issues of psychology as well. And us as coaches, we would love to have a therapist on staff to help us understand the motivations and try to keep our runners, because a lot of our runners, they can get the workouts in, but you know, a lot of times we know this, you know, we can get the training in, but it comes down to the psychology of it. So
yes.
So talk to us a little bit about your work with kids and teens. We know, you know, you talk to the school, your local school system a lot. You really help out with guiding their the athletes there. Talk to us a little bit about how that kind of evolved, how you know your expertise working with kids and youth sports.
Yeah, this is really, I mean, I can say you guys can see my face right now. It is my biggest passion. It really is. And I talk about this often with like other providers, friends, even family. I've always loved teenagers. And I even have teenagers now and I still love teenagers. So like, you know, I don't know what it is. I think like when I reflect, I can still remember being a teenager, even though I'm well beyond those years. And I was an independent kind of sassy, very outspoken, confident teenager, you know, or presented it that way. But I do feel like I had a lot of experiences where like I was misunderstood, you know, or if I wasn't misunderstood, like I wasn't respected. And, you know, of course, I think people can kind of say, well, your prefrontal cortex wasn't closed and that was the way you processed it. But, you know, I say, yeah, if I processed it that way, yeah, I did. And I should be validated for the way that I felt. Right. And so I've kind of held that and taken that on. And I've started working with teenagers right away. And I just think they're so honest and motivated and confused. And they just want to be listened to. I mean, really, like that's what it comes down to, right? And I mean, again, I said I have two teenagers and I will be honest, sometimes when they're in a mood, I don't really want to listen to them. Or I'm listening and I know that where it's come, you know, where this is going is not great. But at the same time, their feelings need to be validated. You know, invalidation, I believe, is the cause of all of the issues that occur with, you know, our young adults that go into adulthood. So I love seeing my younger patients and working with sports, and they would just do the small things like, okay, let's try to eat like breakfast right away. And they'd come back and be like, oh my gosh, I felt great, right? That's the cool thing about the younger adults. Like they're not as jaded as we are with adults, right? Like I think adults are like, well, I felt good, but I'm not sure if I felt good because I had an extra cup of coffee or I slept a little bit better. Or, you know, we're in our heads so much from our experience. Our young adults, they're in the moment and they're like, I ate breakfast there and I felt better. Therefore that was helpful. Do you know what I mean? But then I started to notice that a lot of the kids that I were seeing like had the best intentions and were doing the work, but they weren't being listened to, they weren't being valued, and that we have like a systemic issue in our society. And this is, you know, this is just my belief. I think, you know, I scroll through TikTok and Instagram and all this kind of stuff, and people complain about the parents, like, oh, the parent, you know, all the youth sports and things like that. I'm like, okay, yeah. The parents might be an issue with the youth sports, But then there's also parents that are pissed off because, you know, the coaches are the problem. The athletic directors are the problem. The adults who don't have the emotional intelligence or understand, you know, the brain of the young adult, they're the problem. So it's just kind of this vicious cycle. So I started to talk with my clients, and when they would tell me things, I would say, hey, do you need somebody to help you advocate? And if they did, I would advocate for them. And if they didn't feel comfortable with it, we would role play, and I would teach them like, hey, okay, this, I'm your coach. This is what we can do. And I started to see that their self-identity, really changed from being like, I'm the soccer star or I'm the lacrosse star to like, I own, you know, respect, and I can speak for myself and have boundaries. And I just feel like it's so important. So I try to be everywhere. It's hard, but I'm in the FCPS, Frederick County Public Schools. I'm in the school systems. I have a relationship with the trainers. They bring me in when they need me. I work with a couple of baseball places. Pease Baseball is a place that I'm working with right now with baseball athletes. I talk to swim teams, gymnastics, any place that will take me, I will go and kind of speak to them just to kind of help advocate for our kids.
You're so lucky. And Julie, I know you've had Amy come speak for your sports teams.
Yes. Amy, you were terrific. You've spoken to a couple of PTAs yes. in my kids' schools. And then of course you've spoken to the cross country team, which I so appreciated. And I really liked what you said earlier. I just want to pause on it. When you said that you believe that the root of so many issues in terms of communication and self-esteem is validation. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate you saying that. I think it's a reminder to us as parents, but also sort of for any coaches listening, it's important whether your athlete is a child or an adult, validation is so important. Validating feelings, validating suggestions, it's a team mm-hmm. effort. And I think that segues nicely. I want to just talk a little bit about coaching and specifically with youth and teen athletes. It seems to me that a great coach is a coach that doesn't just direct, but rather validates and creates a culture where the team feels that each athlete has a say. So mm-hmm. my question to you first is, when athletes come to you and talk to you about the issues they're having, where you feel you might need to write a letter on their behalf or advocate, what is going on? And are you seeing patterns?
Yes, I do see patterns. And I mean, I'm just going to be blunt. I think the biggest pattern that I see is nepotism. And I mean, that's a big word, right? And I wish that it would be cool and that like the kids whose moms and dads were the coaches could wear like nepo, what was it? What is it? Nepo baby or whatever that thing is that was on TikTok. But I struggle with this because, and I think we talked about this as well, you know, in the public high school, right, sector, people aren't paid. It's a volunteer position, right? And so oftentimes we have
paid. Well, they are paid in MCPS.
Are they paid?
Not a lot.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. So a little bit, right? So, so there's, you know, moms and dads who have an interest and are athletic and they coach. And I think I see two things. I see the parent who is the coach who also has their own identity, right? Like, so it's like the coach that you see where you're like, oh, I know they're an athlete too. I mean, you can visually tell, which I know that sounds judgmental, but you can, right? And they're usually often on the field with the kids and they're running and things like that. And they have like their own identity. And then I think we have the coaches who are in it for probably the wrong reason, right? And I think part of the reason is, and I understand this 100%, is that a parent already knows what their kid is going into with high school, right? They already know it's broken. So they get into it to kind of protect their kid. And I get it. I get it. It's kind of like, well, you know, it was a shitty situation now, right? I'm going to get in there because I think I can do a good job. So I think it comes from the right intention. However, like when you get in it and you realize, oh my gosh, I'm getting paid crap, right? I'm volunteering all these hours. it's not an even playing field. I've got, you know, three kids who are great, and I've got 20 something who need to be developed, and I don't know how to develop them. I don't have an athletic director who really supports me. And these moms and dads are pissed because they've been through the system for years and they've had it, right? So I just think it's like so mucky. And I think that it really comes down to, you know, does the coach have the experience? Do they have emotional intelligence? And can they get rid of their ego, right? And if they can't do all of those things, they're usually a poor coach. I know it's going to probably tick people off, but if you can't have the emotional intelligence, if you can't let go of your ego and you can't be objective and you can't look at, you know, the right things, you just don't have it.
So Amy, that being said, which is certainly true in many instances, and, you know, we hear it a lot, we get parents coming to us saying like the coach at school doesn't know what they're doing. Help me help my child. What can a parent do that's in a, when they're in a situation like that and they're seeing their child, you know, be subject to this kind of, you know, to what they feel like might not be the best coaching environment. What can a parent do?
Yeah. So that's the interesting thing. And that's the thing I struggle with, right? So I'm in the school system and I do a lot of training with the school counselors as well, who are also, you know, aware of like things that are going on. Ultimately, you know, in high school and even middle school, I think administration wants to see kind of the kids, talk for themselves, right? And ideally, yes, for sure, we want our kids to be able to be in a space where they can speak for themselves. However, depending on the situation and depending on the experience of the coach or how the coach kind of reacts or kind of communicates with the team, you know, the child may not feel safe. And I feel like if they don't feel safe, I feel like it's negligent to force a kid to talk to somebody if they do not feel safe, right? The problem is from the parent perspective, I think parents have no idea what to do. I've had many discussions with many different kind of providers and counselors and throughout the different school districts. And what I have been told is that the best thing to do is for the parent to go to the coach, kind of present the case. And then from there, if it's not, if the problem isn't kind of alleviated or there's not specific changes to then go to the athletic director. But I'm here to tell you, the athletic director at my kid's school, and I wanted to follow up with him as a dietitian who's giving all of his teams free talks and advice. He hasn't gotten back to me. So, and anybody who's listening to this knows who that is, and I don't care. But, you know, I am telling you, you know, going into the school and giving free advice and help for sports nutrition for the teams, and I am not being valued to get a return call or a meeting, the parents probably aren't either, right? So it gets kind of tricky.
So what advice do you have, knowing that those are some barriers for parents on how they can best support their child if there are flaws, as you mentioned? What should a parent do to support their child at home, emotionally, yes, and to ensure that they don't become completely deflated overall?
I think that you have to have honest discussions with your kids, right? So, I mean, it's, you know, yes, this isn't fair. And it is completely normal that you feel this way and that you're frustrated. What do you like about this experience, right? What do you not like about this experience? And if what you like about the experience outweighs what you don't like, is it worth it for you to stick with this for the short term, right? Like, so for example, I've said to my kids, yeah, this isn't the best experience. Yeah, you know, the coach's kids are going to definitely play over you, but how can we look at it a different way? And like my kids are like, I kind of look at it as a free workout to get myself ready for the travel season. You know, I want to perform there anyways, right? And I just kind of remind them and check in, right? Now, if they came back to me and said, you know, I can't really think of a positive way to look at this, and it's so miserable and I feel unsafe, I would go above and above and above, you know, until I can get. So I would go up, I would reach out to the coach. If I'm not getting what I need from the coach, I'd reach out to the athletic director. I'd give him 48 hours. If he doesn't respond to me, I would respond again and CC the principal, who would hopefully be able to kind of help me. And if I didn't get a response 48 hours from then, I would talk to the AD's boss, right? I think what happens is the majority of adults don't do that. Not I think what happens, I know what happens. And I think the reason why the parents don't do that is they are 100% afraid of what is going to happen to their kid when they do that, retaliation, right? My advice about that, and this is going to piss people off too, but people who know me know I do that. You know what? If you send an email and CC other people, right? There's more people who know what's going on and you can prove the retaliation. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like the parents who use retaliation as, you know, fear of retaliation as an excuse, I'm going to challenge you. Are you really afraid of that, or are you too lazy to protect your kid?
It's a good, honest question. Amy, in your practice, do you see kids that are, experiencing effects of, you know, either performance effects or their, eating disorders or psychological effects that are coming from either coaching that is misdirected or parents that are misdirected? Do you see that as kind of a root cause of some of the challenges that your clients are facing? Does that play a role in any way?
Unfortunately, it does. And we kind of keep a tally, in our office of the schools and the athletes, and we are able to see a pattern, usually within the same school and the same sport and with coaches. Do I think it's malicious? No. Just from a sports performance perspective, just to kind of like, just simple, I was at a baseball game at the end of this year, and there was a really great hit. And I heard, I don't really advertise and I'm a dietitian if people don't know, right? But I heard one of the moms said, well, his coach told him to eat protein. That must be why he's hitting. And I'm thinking, oh my God, why is the coach? I mean, it's just a complete inaccurate information, right? So I think, again, not that it's malicious, but I think like if you don't have the knowledge of the nutrition needs, really just don't give the recommendation, right? So we've got kids who are hearing messages that are incorrect, like eat more protein, don't eat sugar, all of the kind of, those types of things. I think remember these kids, their brains are still kind of growing and connecting, right? So if you're constantly kind of like, if you've got the star and you're constantly like, oh, they're our track star, she's our track star, going to states again this year, like before the season has even like started. And, she's really working hard. She's like, whatever the discussion is. You got to be careful, because what you're doing subconsciously is you are just molding this like self-identity, right? And so then they come to our office and they have no idea who they are outside of that self-identity, right? And if they're not eating right, guess what happens? They get injured. And when they get injured, I'm the bad guy. I have to take it away because it's not safe, right? So I see this all the time with runners and stress fractures all the time, right? And we have to take it away. And when we take it away, it's the only thing they know, because it was the only thing they were rewarded on. And it is so incredibly sad and so hard to work through.
That is such, I think, such an important point that we often talk about with adult runners, is that self-identity. But I think with kids, especially when they're getting positive reinforcement from parents, mm-hmm. or they're getting the pressure from coaches or whatever it is, that they feel like their worth is tied up in their performance. Like if I don't, set a PR, my parents aren't going to, you know, think I'm the greatest anymore. If I don't, you know, score, my coach isn't going to think, you know, I'm not going to be. That to me is such an important, and forming that at young age, in a young age, that then goes with you through, you know, throughout your life. And Julie and I were talking about this before of, you know, you want to, I, as a parent, want to create kids that have a joy and passion for athletic pursuits their entire life, and right, not have it be their identity, but have it be how they learn lessons and how they learn skills in life and how they derive joy and community and that type of thing. And I feel like in order to do that, they have to have a perspective that it's not their, like, their performance isn't what is defining them. It's the characteristics that they're. And so I think that that when you just said that, that identity, and I think that I frankly think that parents and coaches probably play a big role in yes, and defining their kids as a ex athlete, or as a, you know, like you said, as a runner, as a baseball player, as a star, as a, and that that's I think a really important point.
Yeah, and it's so risky, right? And it's it comes from a place of being proud of your child, right? But right. And, you know, of course, I do a million things wrong as a parent. I mean, I'm sure we can get my kids on a podcast in a couple of years. They'll tell me. But the one thing that I've always done, and I'm sure somebody would like to psychoanalyze this, is I've asked my kids, did you have fun? And like, and I have two different kids. So I have one that's really hard on themselves, and then one that's like, you know, they feel like they could have the worst game ever, and they feel like they were the star, which is great. Do you know what I mean? I love it. But the one, when they get really down themselves, like, I didn't do this and I didn't do that, like, I say, hey, there's always somebody better. There's always going to be somebody better. Right. And I don't say that to cut, you know, them down. It's just like, there is always, it's the fact of life, right? There is going to be a dietitian that is better at, you know, doing this, like, or, oh, yeah, you know, seeing, like, for sure, diabetes or something, you know, I mean, there always is, right? So I think it comes out of a place with, from love, but I think it just gets so dangerous because the kid just keeps feeling and hearing that they're rewarded for that part of their life. And that part of the life goes away. There's not that many opportunities to do it professionally, you know, any sports really, right? Like, so it's dangerous.
So what do you do though, if for the 0.05% of parents who have kids that are in that top tier that they're looking to potentially gain a college scholarship, for example, and they see that path, how does a parent and a coach work with a talented athlete without causing that athlete to assume the identity of the sport?
I think, I mean, that's a big question. And, you know, the interesting thing is I see those athletes, right? And the athletes that are at the 0.05%, you know, the top athletes, they have something different. Do you know what I mean? They were, and probably we'll see, there's probably something genetic, right? They're born with it, right? And they're really independent in nature with their sport. It's something that they choose to do all the time. Like, their parents don't have to tell them to do it. They don't have to ask them to practice. They are able to be focused, and they don't really hear all that jargon from like the coaches and the parents and that sort of thing, right? I feel like the kids who are in a situation where the coaches and the parents are trying to convince them you are the 0.05%, those are the kids that are struggling with the self-identity and the disappointment, because deep inside, they're struggling. They know that this might not be something that they want to do, or they know that they are not the best, but they're too afraid to say anything because they're too afraid of disappointing anybody else. At least that's what I see. I'm not saying that the best of the best don't have struggles and aren't stressed and that sort of thing, but, you know, they're the Derek Jeters of the world, right? Like, I mean, if you watched his The Captain, I mean, watch it. It's awesome. They're just different. You know, they just have a different mentality.
Recently, I was talking to Lisa about this. Sally Jenkins, who's Washington Post sports writer, just came out with a book where she analyzed the most successful coaches, like Mike Krzyzewski.
Yep.
And the most successful athletes like Tom Brady, and talked about their habits. And one of the things that she noted in her book was that athletes who are in that high quality athletes, doesn't mean the most talented, but the most motivated athletes, don't need someone to direct them, to tell them what to do. They have the habits already in place, and they don't need a coach to provide discipline. They just need the coach to form a team culture so that all of the athletes follow the lead of the athletes that already have those processes in place to create the habits that create the small things. And so my question to you is, can you talk a little bit about what you've seen that's positive in terms of coaching and parenting, particularly with respect to team culture? What have you seen that's working?
Yes, I would say, I mean, it was a lifesaver during the pandemic for any of the sports who could still play. I think it saved, honestly, this is a big statement, I think it saved some kids' lives, right? I really do. And I just got goosebumps when I said, I know it saved my kids, right? So, I mean, just the sense of being a part of something is amazing, right? We know that isolation increases depression. And so like being able to be on a team and see people is wonderful. Being able to, there's a resilience to it, right? Like being able to go on a team, regardless of who's on it and who's good and who's not, like you have to learn how to communicate with these folks. You have to learn how to like read their emotions, right? Something we weren't able to do for a couple of years with those masks, right? So these kids are kind of stunted with those like with the emotional awareness and the assessment of like facial expressions. Like, so being able to see like when your teammate is like struggling or like, hey, I think that they're hurt or I think that they need a break. Being able to like stand up for teammates, right? Like sometimes you see like these teams that are like really competitive and they'll kind of have this chatter and stuff like that. And I know like sometimes people are like, God, that's really annoying. But I think like, how thrilling is it when I see something like that happen and like the teammate comes over and puts their arm around them and is like, hey, leave them alone. You know, it's like, it's pretty awesome. Right. Also just moving your body. It's awesome for stress reduction. It's awesome for endorphin production. And Lisa, I echo what you say. Like I wanted my kids to try everything because I know for me, something that has helped me in all of my years is like being able to move, right? It's like, I know it's kind of corny. It's my medicine, right? Like I can think so clearly when I'm moving. I feel really free. I feel so grateful that I'm still able to do it. You know what I mean? And so joining a team and being in sports and enjoying it, like hopefully it's creating a culture that you're going to be able to continue on like when you're older. Those are the great things. And if you have a good coach and you have that relationship, there are a lot of clients. I know I've said some negative things, right? But I have a lot of clients who their coaches are some of the closest people that they have in their lives, right? Like that coach has seen them push themselves in ways that like the parents may not have seen them, right? And so they're valued a little bit differently. And their resilience is celebrated. So there's a lot of good things about it too, right? We just need to kind of make sure that we have the right people in the right positions. That's the only thing I'm trying to advocate for.
Yeah, that comes back full circle to where we started with, where, you know, some of the problems start is just people who have good intentions, but don't have the right experience or qualifications. I also want to just touch on, because it's your area of expertise, and I feel like we can't have a discussion about youth and sports without having a discussion, but eating disorders.
Yeah.
And how parents can identify early in boys and girls. I think we often think girls, but boys, it can be too. In certain sports, maybe more than others. But I think there's often when you have a inexperienced coach or a coach that doesn't know how to coach, particularly girls, but youth athletes, there could be, you know, weight pressures or athletes themselves can feel like, oh, if I was thinner, I'd be faster, I'd be more, you know, my coach would like me better, I'd be able to perform better. How can parents identify early and hopefully prevent the development of eating disorders. Because we know, and you can talk to this, but it's probably starting at 7, 8, 9, way younger than even we're talking about. So how can we see that, and how can coaches and parents help prevent that from developing?
Yes, that's a great question. I would say, parents, your kids. So if you have a gut feeling that something is going wrong, go with it and get it checked as soon as possible, right? Like I am seeing since the pandemic, I mean, there's been about a 300% increase in eating disorders, much younger. Like you said, I'm now seeing like at 8 or 9, whereas I would see closer to 11, 12. And I think the thing that is most unsettling to me is I am seeing patients often way later than I'd like to. So they've already, I will tell you, in all honesty, I am shocked that people are not coming to me until some of their kids have lost like 20 pounds or more, which for some of these kids, it's like that's a third to a fourth of their body weight, right? So again, not judging, but just saying, like, if you have that gut, go with it and get checked out. And if you don't like the answer that you're getting from like the person that you're seeing, advocate. Signs to look out for, listen to your kid. I mean, it is interesting to me, if you're really truly listening to the things that they say, like even when they're talking, even like when you bring food home, I can tell right away. Like, I mean, I'm a dietitian, and yesterday my daughter said, did you know that Celsius helps you lose weight? And I was like, first of all, you're not allowed to drink Celsius. It sucks to have a dietitian as a mom. But I was like, what are you talking about? And she was like, yeah, it's on TikTok. So we had to have this whole conversation again, which I'm like blue in the face about, like, is TikTok really real with information? But just listening, right? Like, and I remember there was a time like when my son was on a team and he would say like, so is fruit good for me or not? I'm not supposed to eat sugar, right? So I think I'm probably more aware of those things just being a dietitian, but I would say like, just listen to what they say. Also pay attention. No kid really should be less hungry when they're playing a sport, period. And really not even playing a sport. Like if you are in a walking band, right? Like, and you're in theater, right? And you're dancing and you're performing, you should have an appetite or more of an appetite, right? So if your kid starts to like, maybe like skipping snacks or like saying that they ate dinner already, I would look into it, right? And the statement really is like, you need to nourish your body, right? And it's not, just kind of paying attention to that. If there's all of a sudden like, hey, I think I'm like, I've been looking and I want to try something that's like gluten-free or vegan-free vegan, or, something like that, like ask questions like why? And even like the simple question of like, oh, do you think it tastes better? Right? Because I can tell you like gluten-free food doesn't usually taste better, right? And kids usually eat food for the taste. So, I really feel like you want to pay attention to those types of things. Also, like if all of a sudden they start isolating themselves and don't want to be around friends, that's a big thing. Or if you see like their clothes change, like all of a sudden they're covering up more, like it is really humid in Maryland. So I know it's kind of the style to wear like the baggy sweatshirts and sweatpants and things like that. But like when it's 95 degrees, and they're not in air conditioning, I think just kind of paying attention to those types of things. And I think having an honest conversation, it's completely normal to kind of feel like you're walking on eggshells because it is an uncomfortable conversation. But if you start to notice that there are, consistent patterns, I would simply ask, like, how do you feel about your body in the way that you look, And they may not say or answer the question, but if you have that emotional intelligence and you know your child, you can tell from how they're reacting. My biggest urge to people listening to this is to not wait, right? Don't give it a couple weeks, because the more that you wait, you're allowing those patterns to solidify and it becomes a habit, and they're getting an endorphin reduction from following their rules. And it gets harder and harder and harder to break those patterns the longer that goes.
That's great advice. Amy, do you recommend parents go to a pediatrician first, or do you say go straight to a dietitian that has experience with youth?
That's a big question. I mean, and a good one. I would say I would, and what I recommend people is to call their pediatrician's office. And I would actually ask for the manager and say, this is what I suspect. Do you have anybody that you recommend who has eating disorder experience?
Right.
And they usually know who does and who doesn't. And if they don't, then I would go directly to a dietitian. But I mean, I'm, again, a big advocate. So there are people who reach out to us all the time who aren't even in our state. And I am more than willing to help people get what they need. You can also go to the National Eating Disorder Association and look at, type in your zip code, and they will give you a list of all providers who have the eating disorder experience.
That's super helpful. And switching gears a little bit, but relatedly, you brought up how your daughter picked up some tips from social media. And so transitioning to that, we would be remiss if we didn't bring up social media, the impact on our youth and teens. How do you feel that it's impacted your patients? And as parents of athletes in particular, because that's what we're talking about today, what can we do in terms of course, the obvious, try to limit it, but realistically they're all looking at it. So
yes.
What are your thoughts and how has it changed for you too?
Yes. Well, it's been proven that, social media did have a play in like increasing the eating disorders, like during the pandemic. So, there's legislation that is hopefully going to go through to have like a third party, who's able to kind of look at their formulas of like what's sent to everybody. I don't know why I'm losing that word right now.
Algorithm.
Yes. Oh my goodness. So that is great. I think, you know, so from the eating disorder perspective, there's a lot on there. I think something that I do that my kids hate is I ask them to hand me my phones. I mean, they're almost 16 and almost 15, and I just look at their For You page. And I don't care. I just scroll through it because it gives me an idea of what they're looking at. And I tell them, like, this is my phone. I pay for it. If you want to have the phone, then get a job and, you know, and pay for it. Right. But if you look at the For You page, you can see what your kids are looking at. So I do recommend doing that. Like, I know social media is going to be here. I'm not going to take it away from them. I do ask to be their friends and that sort of thing. But I just every once in a while ask to do that. From the sports thing, gosh, like, I feel like that's getting worse. You know, my son plays baseball, and like Twitter for some reason is like huge for baseball. Right. I mean, and it's like insane. Right. So you have a good hit. It's sent out. I mean, I think my son got like 30,000 views or something on something, like, which is insane. And I'm like, I don't even know how that happens. Right. But we're also seeing this, like verbal commit, you know, announcements on like Instagram and Twitter and, you know, TikTok and all these types of things. I think it's very hard for our kids to like see those things come up constantly and not compare themselves. Right. And I think the thing I remind them is, okay, you see 1,000 images every single day. People are not posting like struck out today. Like, you know, great strikeout for and went 0-3, you know, or like, you know, gymnasts aren't like fell off the bars today, enjoyed it. You know what I mean? They are posting, or somebody else is posting like their best part of that entire game, right? So I think just having conversations around it, like, yeah, that's great. And like what I say to my kids, every single time they show me something on Twitter or Instagram, I always say, I'm so happy for them. That's the only thing I say. And the reason why I do that is because I want to model, like, you should be happy for them. That's great. If that is what makes that kid happy, that's awesome. It has no relevance to your life. Right. And really, like, when it comes to like the verbal commits, and this is a whole other podcast and that sort of thing, I mean, I would be really interested to know, like, what is the percentage of people who verbally commit at a young age that definitely go to that school? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a verbal commit. There's really nothing in writing. We don't know what's going to happen. So I just think having the conversations with the kids, like, you know, that's great. I'm really happy for that kid. I hope that they're enjoying what they're doing. And like, what are your goals? Are you happy? Are you having fun? Just kind of modeling that.
And what about parents? Any guidelines or any patterns you're seeing with parents
on social media? Yeah, I mean, I'm terrible because I just unfriend everybody and like and block them, right? I think like it's wonderful to celebrate your kid. It's wonderful to celebrate your kid. But I mean, I'm not saying anything that anybody doesn't agree with. I don't really give a shit about, like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I will say my relatives, like, you know, are really happy to see the stuff that like my kids do. And especially my older relatives, like they just love, like they didn't have this growing up, right? My friends don't care what my kids did at their baseball game. I mean, they really don't. They don't care. Like they, if you know, they just don't care. So I don't know, just kind of use it sparingly, I think.
And you always tell it as it is, and you always say what we're all thinking. I want to just go back for one second. You said something in your last, you know, in your last comment that I think we should talk about, and even, you know, we can close it out on this, but, you know, modeling behavior, you talked about, you want to model behavior for your kids saying I'm happy for them. And I think that kind of ties everything together, that as parents, like when we started this, we said, we're trying to figure out as parents, how can we help our kids? And I think it all comes back to modeling behavior. And yes, that means modeling behavior in terms of finding balance in our lives and not having one sole focus and defining ourselves. I think it means modeling behavior in how do we look at food and how do we, you know, looking at our bodies and how are we communicating about our bodies. It goes back to sportsmanship and modeling all of that. So I think that is, you know, sort of the common theme that we've heard throughout the night. And something I think when we come back to the question of what can we do as parents, it's modeling the behavior that, you know, that we hope our kids will pick up.
Yes. And it's not easy. I mean, I make it sound like it's so easy, right? But I think if you truly, as a parent, if you really truly believe that this is the most important job of your life, right, I think you're more motivated to do the right thing. You know, there are times that I feel something differently than, you know, what I model. But I know I have to, and it's taken me a while as I've gotten older, right? But now that's where the, like the pause is so important. Let me pause, let me model, right? But yeah, modeling behavior is so important.
Absolutely. And advocacy, which is also part of modeling, is showing your kids that it's important to be respectful. It's important to be polite, but it doesn't mean you're not respectful if you advocate.
Yeah.
And I think that's important too. And that's not something necessarily that was taught as much in our generation. I think our kids are much better at advocacy. And as a result, I see my kids doing things I wouldn't have had the courage to do in terms of advocacy in a respectful way, but yes, that at the end of the day is very important too. So I know I appreciated what you referenced earlier and how to go up the chain politely, because I think there are a lot of folks out there that probably feel hesitant to do that due to retaliatory consequences. But you're right, sometimes you have to advocate in a bigger way, and it's not ideal, but when that happens, likely you feel strongly about something and you've tried other avenues. So
right.
Before we go, Amy, is there anything else that you'd like to leave out there for our listeners in terms of being able to support their kids or their friends' kids as athletes?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I read this years ago, and of course, I don't know where I read this, but I read from somebody that the only thing they say to their child after a game is, I love to watch you play. I don't know if you've ever heard that. And I don't know who said it, but it struck such a chord with me. I mean, I still like kind of feel like I'm having all the feels like saying that, right? And like, if you didn't play the sport, don't make the comment. Or even if you did, like, and you're not doing it now, don't make the comment, you know? I feel like kids are smart and resilient. If they had a bad game, they already know what they didn't do, right? So just show them that you're there to support them. Tell them that you love to watch them play. Ask if they had fun. And leave it at that, right? And I think just show up for them. Like when they're sad, let them be sad and validate it. And when they're nervous, let them be nervous. And you know, let them show their resiliency, right? Like, I mean, I agree with what you said, Julie. Like, we weren't really taught to kind of advocate for ourselves when we were younger. It was like kind of considered to be disrespectful. But you know what? There's nothing wrong with walking away if you feel like it's the right thing to do, right? It's only going to make them stronger, because one day they're going to have a bad boss. They're going to have a bad professor in college. They might have a bad boyfriend, right? And we want them to walk away from the bad boyfriend, right? Or the bad girlfriend. So let's just keep rewarding their how smart they are, right? Don't second guess them. They're smart.
Amy, what we love so much about you is that you're not only an amazing dietitian with the, you know, with just that we turn to you for, you know, so many, with so many questions, and we send over a lot of our runners to you, but just the experience and the knowledge you have as a parent, as a mother, as a, as somebody who's really worked, you know, extensively with youth and you know, we really appreciate your knowledge and your guidance and your insight and your honesty. That's the best part. We always know we can get an honest answer from you, Amy. And so thank you for coming on our podcast again. And we're sure we will have you on in the future again. Why don't you let our listeners know where they can find you and how they can get in touch with you?
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for having me. You can find me through my website, kindrednutrition.com. I'm also on social media, which I don't love, but I'm on it. kindrednutrition_Frederick. And it's the Instagram. I'm dabbling in TikTok. So, and I am on TikTok as Kindred Nutrition. So you can find me out in those couple of places.
Also, and podcast.
Oh my gosh. How did I forget that? Don't Be Foodish. That's a fun podcast you can check out as well.
Well, thank you so much, Amy. It was always great chatting with you, and we so appreciate your time. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Amy.
Thank you so much for listening to the Run Farther and Faster Boston Marathon podcast. We want to give a special thanks to our editor, Aaron Bryant. And if you enjoyed this episode and enjoy listening to our podcast, please share it with others. And please leave a review if you haven't done so already on iTunes. Thanks for listening and have a great week.